T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bill Michaels Show. I'm Kevin Holden from CBS 58 in Milwaukee. Bill's out for a couple of days, so we're stepping in, talking Brewers and talking Packers. And in the last few minutes, we have learned a major development for the future of the Milwaukee Brewers minor league organization, for the franchise. We joked last time I was here, Joe, about the affiliate game, which is the matching up of Major League team and AAA franchise. There are AAA cities and Major League teams, and they pair up every other offseason. So that is all happening right now. The Brewers have just announced their new AAA franchise, and it is not in Nashville, and it is not in Fresno. Those are the two spots we thought would be the possible landing spots. They're headed to San Antonio, Texas. The San Antonio Missions are going to be a new AAA team, the former Colorado Springs Sky Sox, and we'll dip into this a little more here in a moment. But the Brewers, for the next 2 years, will be affiliated with the San Antonio Missions, the new AAA version of the San Antonio Missions. It's a lot of fun. San Antonio is a good place. And I was throwing a trivia question at Joe during the break. Which Brewers franchise member came straight from San Antonio to Milwaukee? And he looked at me like I had three heads. The answer is Brian Anderson. Brian Anderson was a broadcaster for the San Antonio Missions when they were a double-A team. He did some other work as well, and then joined the Brewers. It's more than a decade ago now.
Yeah, hard to believe. Brian Anderson, by the way, will be on the show tomorrow.
One of the best dudes there is, no question. And you see him everywhere. He never stops working. He works 97 hours a day, I swear.
I believe it.
Yeah, he's a tremendous guy. So, all things Brewers plus the San Antonio news. Time to get to our insider, Adam McCalvey.
Best Brewers coverage. This is the Bill Michaels Show. Now, let's get the latest on the crew from insider Adam McCalvey. Brought to you by Concordia Veterans Services. Preparing vets to make an impact within their next mission through education. Find out more at cuw.edu/veterans.
Adam McCalvey joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. And Adam, I just want to thank you because clearly you were waiting and you had San Antonio and Milwaukee both waiting until moments before you appear here on the show to break this major news of the AAA affiliate. So thank you.
I appreciate you talking there for about 4 minutes because I was finishing my story and sending it in.
Yeah, you really do have to multitask at 11 a.m. That's not easy.
Find the Brewers were in Double A San Antonio in 1972, and I'm trying to find if there were any, you know, any like notable players on that team, and there's like a gap in the baseball reference page, so somebody needed to find that the 1972 San Antonio Missions and send me that roster. Let's see if there was anybody good.
And you have to think, because that era of the Brewers baseball, 3, 4, 5 years in the future, was that start of that great window, late 70s, early 80s. So you got to think they, you know, some of the Gorman Thomases of the world, some of those guys must have gone through there at some point, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm trying to multitask here and find it. And for some reason, I can't find this team's roster.
We've hidden it.
So I'm going to keep looking while I'm talking.
No worries. You do that, and I'll throw you an easy softball so you can multitask while you you do this looking for the old Missions roster from the early 70s. This is, I think, maybe a mild surprise. I think a lot of folks thought that the Texas teams, Rangers and Astros, would have a rivalry with the two AAA teams in Texas. Is it a surprise to you that this is the way the Brewers went? And by the way, same ownership group as the team that owned the Colorado Springs franchise.
Yeah, exactly. The Elmore Sports Group. So there's this shuffle going on where Colorado Springs is moving to San Antonio. Rookie Helena is moving to Colorado Springs. That hasn't been announced, but I think the Brewers are going to stay there. So they'll still have a team in Colorado Springs, but it'll be Rookie League. So they're basically keeping this affiliation with this particular ownership group. And the deal with San Antonio is it's a great city, obviously, one of the best AAA cities there is. But once again, just like Nashville a couple of years ago, people will remember, they'll find themselves in the middle of a stadium debate where there was, I think, hope of building a new downtown stadium. The economics of that has changed in recent years, as the Brewers know very well from their spring training project. And that hasn't, a downtown stadium there hasn't materialized. So they're playing in this park that's from 1994. It's, you know, a AA level facility that's now going to be in AAA. So they're renovating the clubhouses, the batting cages. They're going to do some things just to get it up to basically code for AAA ball players. But it's, you know, it's not Nashville. It's not Indianapolis. It's not Louisville in terms of the quality of the facility. So they're going to keep working on that. And you know, Doug Melvin was very frustrated by that whole process in Nashville and ended up getting a great facility for the Nashville Sounds, and then unfortunately, little, you know, depending on who you ask, a little inside ball went on, and Nashville ended up going with the Oakland A's. Now that fell apart. They're going for a new affiliate that looks like it'll be the Nationals or the Rangers, and the Brewers were kind of left out. So it's, you know, it's an upgrade in some ways. I think getting away from Colorado Springs is a good thing. That was a challenging player development environment, just from the altitude, the huge outfield. Pitchers had a hard time there. Some Jorge Lopez is the best example of that. So it's a good thing from a player development standpoint. Even if they're not going to be playing in the shiniest new stadium, they're going to have to navigate all this political stuff with that project.
Yeah, the stadium will be the thing we talk about when we talk about that AAA team, certainly for the months and possibly years to come. But I think the other thing that's of interest to me here is the Brewers have been, no matter where it was, Nashville may be the one exception, the Brewers were going to end up with a AAA franchise that's still far away, and a lot of that has to do more with geography than anything. There just isn't a suitable, available AAA franchise that's close to Milwaukee. So San Antonio is certainly an upgrade of city, upgrade of atmosphere, as you mentioned. You don't have to deal with the 6,000 feet of altitude, but still some long flights ahead for guys coming up.
Yeah, no direct flights, and that was going to be the case in Fresno or San Antonio. I was just looking at that to see if, you know, Southwest gets you there. And it gets you there, but you have to go through, you know, it's a connecting flight. So that does matter, especially in today's game where teams all over the place are setting records in terms of transactions and the number of players used. And we've seen the Brewers use that shuttle with the back end of their bullpen to pretty good effect. You know, that has really helped them get to this point of the season with a bullpen that looks like it's in pretty good shape. A lot of that has to do with Adrian Hauser and Jorge Lopez and Brandon Woodruff and Wilkerson and Alec Asher and all these guys who've kind of been on that shuttle. It's a small thing, and they're often pitching in lopsided games and gobbling up a couple of innings in a game that you probably don't remember much about. But the impact of that is being felt at this time of the season in a positive way. So that is, you know, important. But look, it's a big city, lots of flights to Chicago. I'm guessing, I'll have to ask Tom Flanagan what he thinks about this later on, but I'm guessing they're going to view that as a positive, because at Colorado Springs, often guys would have to drive up to Denver and then either fly to Milwaukee or fly to Chicago and then drive up from Chicago. There was just a lot of long days for guys. I mean, the Adrian Hauser moment on the mound is just the best example of what a travel day can do to a guy. You remember that one, Kevin?
Yeah, he shows up in the middle of the night. His bags didn't show up, if I remember right. Is that right?
Well, I'm thinking of the time he leaned over behind the mound and sort of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally lost. Well, who was the remember guy this that? Year that arrived at 5 a.m. with no bags? Who was that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I hear that story. Yeah, I don't know.
It's buried. 162 games. It might have been. Yeah, it gets buried in a long season for sure. But those are difficult travel stories and competitive differences, right? If your pitcher is doing what Adrian Hauser is doing on the mound, that's a competitive difference as opposed to you know, the Braves having Gwinnett and having someone take a 45-minute car ride to the Major League Stadium. So we could talk AAA all day, I'm sure, because that's an interesting resolution to it. But we had a little bit of history last night, Adam, and Christian Yelich hitting for the cycle for the second time this season against the same team. That's something that's never been done before, and Yelich is making all kinds of history. Is he your MVP right now?
Oh, man. Can someone help me? You know, speaking of help me finding this 1972 roster, help me line up a top 10 MVP list, because it is going to be a serious challenge. And I know, you know, look, people are going to be biased here in favor of Christian Yelich. He's had a fantastic MVP caliber season. He is a worthy, if he wins the National League MVP, he is a totally worthy winner. The problem is there's about five other guys that you can say that about. And there's no clear-cut answer for how to do this. You know, some people like wins above replacement. Yelich is actually at the top of that list now on FanGraphs. Lorenzo Cain is number two. If you go to the Baseball Reference version, I think Cain's one. Yelich is still, like, number four. But look, Baez, Goldschmidt, Freeman, there are so Jake DeGrom. There are so many good players that are very evenly matched statistically. And depending on what your favorite stat is, you're going to find something that's going to lead you to the player that you are biased towards. And it's going to be really difficult to sit down there and take bias out of it. Look, I watch Cain and Yelich all year long. I obviously have a very high opinion of their ability as baseball players and their value to this team in what it's done this season with a pitching staff that, you know, looks the way it does and has endured the losses of Jimmy Nelson and Zach Davies and others that they've endured. And yet they find themselves in this position where they're really in it with 2 weeks to go. So I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do that. It's going to be really difficult for everybody who has that ballot. I think you're going to see a ton of different answers this year. Last year it was Votto or Stanton pretty clearly. This year I think it's going to be a wider field, and the way that voters line up their players has the potential to be very important, because, you know, it's like that point system where you get whatever it is, 13 for first place and on down. And it's kind of weighted toward the top. I think that's going to play a role, and I think there's going to be a very close race unless somebody just goes bananas over the next 2 weeks. And just the way that they line up, you know, somebody getting a fourth versus a sixth place vote could end up being the thing that swings this. It's tough this year.
This was an impressive game from Yelich, but an impressive game from the Brewers too, after losing back-to-backs against Pittsburgh, and that streak of series wins came to an end over the weekend. But it seemed to me, and you can't put a lot of weight on one out of 162, but it seemed to me like that game, that result last night, was a bit of a September statement that two-game losing streak stops here and the Brewers resume what they've been doing. That, to me, was one of the more impressive September wins I've seen from this team.
Yeah, well, Kirk Counsell, I thought it was interesting that he said after the game that Yelich had sort of an intent going into the game yesterday. And we asked Yelich about that, you know, because remember, is he had a 30-game on-base streak that was snapped Sunday. And, you know, he said there wasn't anything different, that if he looked different yesterday, it was just kind of a coincidence. He wasn't like, you know, going all war paint going into the game yesterday. He said it was just kind of another day. But I thought it was interesting that Craig Counsell saw it that way, and maybe Counsell felt that way too about the game, that the guys had a little bit of an edge after that series streak snapped, because that's been their formula, how they've, sort of gotten into a relatively commanding position in the wild card standings. It's been win series, seven in a row before they lost to the Pirates, 2-3 to the Pirates. And that's going to be a good formula to get into the tournament. Now, the division, mathematically, the division is really tough right now. So the math says they're more likely to be in that wild card, and that's a very uncomfortable position to be in because it's just such a coin flip, one game. we were talking about that with Council, who is part of the union's executive committee as a player when that new system was put in. And he remembers the players, you know, the players obviously wanted two or three. As a player, to put everything on one game is really uncomfortable. From the league's point of view and a television drama point of view, a one game is awesome. I mean, it's basically game seven right out of the chute. And that's the way it ended up being for a bunch of different reasons, including scheduling and just the mechanics and the logistics of putting a postseason together. So it's a tough position to be in. A lot rides on one game. For one of those teams, it ends really, really quickly and unsatisfyingly. But you get in. At least you're in. And you win that game and you move on, and now you're on equal footing with the other clubs. So it's going to be it is going to be very interesting down the stretch. And the way that NL West is going, where the Rockies and Dodgers are jockeying, it feels like every day about which team is the division leader and which team's in that wild card position. And then the Cardinals are still in it. There's still a lot of drama to be settled of who the Brewers are going to face if they can get in, and where the game's going to be, and all that kind of stuff. And as usual, the way it usually happens in baseball, it looks like it'll come right down to the end.
Adam, check your Twitter. I sent you a link. I sent you a link to the 1972 San Antonio Brewers.
Yeah. Who do we have?
Gorman Thomas was on that team. Bill Travers was on that team. I mean, there's not a ton. It's not nearly as many bodies as I thought. Not nearly as many names that I would recognize. But Gorman Thomas is the standard. They won like 53 games.
Okay.
So they weren't so good.
Yeah. Let's see. 53-87.
So.
Wow, they had three managers. That's a lot.
Wow.
It's a team effort.
That's, yeah.
Boy.
That was and it was the beginning, I guess, of a relationship of 4 years, I think, there between the Brewers and the city of San Antonio. So I won't keep you from writing what you got to write, Adam. Thanks for joining us. Very timely and much appreciated, sir. See you at the ballpark.
I appreciate that very much. I am going to dive right into this and try to figure out, you know, how would I line up the MVP of the 1972 San Antonio mission? Let's see. How did Gorman do that year? Can you talk about Gorman did all right.
Yeah. That's probably your guy. I mean, you know, certainly
26 homers.
Yeah. The career projection's pretty solid. Adam, go enjoy,
Stephen,
man.
Stephen McCartney hit 22. Good old Stephen McCartney.
Can't wait to hear the article to see it, man. Thanks, Adam.
All right. Thanks. See you guys.
Adam McCallaby joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. They work hard. You work hard. They treat you fair for 80-plus years. They've been getting it done. Call them at 800-44-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. Just trying to help a guy out. 1972 San Antonio Brewers. Back to the present next on The Bill Michaels Show.
Border to border. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Getting it revved up here on a Bill Michaels Show. Kevin Holden, CBS 58 in Milwaukee. In today for Bill, lots happening all over the place. Christian Yelich and hitting for the cycle. Brewers have announced their new AAA affiliation, San Antonio. What a road trip that's going to be. Oh, look, Kevin's got a road trip in mind. Packers and Vikings off that tie. Thoughts about the NFC North. But where we haven't gone yet, and we'll go now, Joe, is the Badgers. And there goes that pit in the stomach right there. As soon as I say the word, it's just like, man, this was a team that started the year with playoff aspirations, a team that was sniffing the top four, a team that was, we thought, maybe capable of doing this, or at least for the first time, they had that preseason hype behind them. Wisconsin's been the kind of program that's had to play into that hype. This year, they start with that hype. And then they lose in week three in a non-conference game against BYU. That is, I suppose the number one question, right, is are the goals still there ahead of the Badgers with this one loss to BYU? Can they still make the playoff? Can it still be a special season? Alex Hornibrook struggled a little bit in that game against BYU. And that, as we mentioned, Joe, you and I talked before the show, some of the basics of why the Badgers ended up in the position they ended up against BYU, It's the same reason why this was happening at various games last year. It didn't come back to bite the Badgers in any regular season game last year, but Alex Hornibrook went through those stretches where he struggled, and he did it again against BYU.
Well, the constant theme with this Badgers team now over the last year and a half is getting off to slow starts in the first half and then making up for it in the second half and just running away with things. And I kind of felt the same thing was going to happen again on Saturday. I mean, it was a very close game, too close for comfort, but I thought to myself, they'll pull away. They have no business losing to these guys. They owned BYU last year on the road there in Provo, and they should be able to come back here and take care of business. The thing is, Alex Hornibrook, as much as I defend the guy, you know, I don't think Alex Hornibrook is a great quarterback. I don't think he's ever going to strive to be a great quarterback in college football. You know, I don't know what his ceiling is, if he's ever going to have a future in the NFL. But the one thing that always annoyed me about Alex Hornibrook was the boneheaded mistakes. The man can be so impressive hitting receivers on short little routes, quick releases. But then when it comes to big time plays and trying to make something happen, he will make some stupid mistake, some dumb throw, where you're asking yourself, didn't he see that guy? I could not believe how much he struggled with the great pass protection that he had against this BYU team. I mean, the run game was going nowhere, so you knew that you were going to have to throw the ball more, and you got Danny Davis back. So you're loaded now. You have three really good receivers. You got an emerging target in Jake Ferguson, who I think they needed to throw the ball more to. Yep. And he was open a lot, even when the ball wasn't going his way. And Hornibrook just couldn't take advantage of it. I can't constantly defend this guy, Kevin.
Yeah.
He has no business playing the way that he did against BYU. You know, the situation on fourth down, he's throwing a bullet over the middle of the field, and I'm trying to figure out who he's throwing to. I'm trying to figure out, on a free play on the final drive of the game, why Alex Hornibrook just isn't just throwing the ball down the field. I'm pretty sure he saw that there were too many players on the field. But, hey, he's not Aaron Rodgers, as we all know. But why is Hornibrook trying to check down and hit a guy in the flat when he clearly has a free play? You can hear it in the crowd. I was down on the field losing to a team like BYU. And now there goes your hopes for the college football playoff. It is pretty much done. Now, I said it at the beginning of the year, Kevin, I was not confident at all that this this Badger team was college football playoff bound, because I did not think they were a complete team. But what I was more concerned about was the defense, because they had lost so many guys. The offense, on the other hand, was supposed to be their biggest strength. That Alex Hornibrook was going to take another step forward, not backward. Not making the same boneheaded mistakes he did last year. The kid sits in the film room a lot. He studies the film. How many more times do we have to see bad mistakes from him? I thought in that game, they were going to pull away because that offense is too good to fail. Even if Jonathan Taylor is having a bad game and he's not getting any help from his line, the line is so good about creating holes for him. Well, they didn't do that at all, and Jonathan Taylor struggled because of it. But the passing game could have made up for that, and it didn't. And it was frustrating. So I didn't think they were a college football playoff team, but I'm disappointed that the offense, not the defense, let them down. The defense did their job in the second half. It was the offense.
And this is a valid point given to this year. In other words, if you could say Alex Hornibrook is Joel Stave is his predecessor and on back, right?
Right.
But here's the problem. In the Joel Stave era and the eras before, you did not have the same sort of expectations coming into a season. With these playoff expectations comes the idea that you have to have your guys play at that level, which means your quarterback has to play better than a quarterback would have done against BYU 4 years ago. That's significant. And now, because that didn't happen, you're knocked backwards. And this is another thing we talked about before the show, Joe. It's tougher for the Badgers than it is for Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, whatever. Not only because of where the rankings are, but because of the history of the team. the history of the Badgers have had so many terrific seasons, but that level, that high, way up there level, that's Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. If they lose to BYU, there's a chance for them to get back in. At this point, for me, the Badgers win out. I don't know if that's enough.
Probably not.
That's a big question. Did this loss to BYU spoil the season for you? Can it still be a special season? 855-830-8648. We'll take a break. We'll talk Badgers next on The Bill Michaels Show.
16 stations strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
You know, it stings. You know, but it's week three, so, you know, we have time to fix some things. We're going to use this loss as fuel. You know, just come in tomorrow, look at the film, see what things we can correct, and just use this as fuel and bounce back next week and try to get the W next week.
Badgers players separating what they can control from what they can't control at this point, and that's something that very good athletes, elite athletes do. Good to hear that part, at least, that you don't let a loss beat you twice, that they look at stuff and they improve and they move on to the conference opener, Big Ten opener, which is at Iowa this Saturday. The Bill Michaels Show, Kevin Holden, CBS 58 in Milwaukee. Stepping in, talking Badgers, talking just heartbreak. I mean, Gaglianone hits a field goal. It's a tie. You got a chance to do something in overtime, and you can erase the memory of all of that stuff that happened. Remember a couple of years ago in a similar situation? I think it was the last non-conference game. And I feel like it was Georgia State. And it was way too close, way too late. And then there's a moment where the Badgers pull away, and it's like, okay, you can just take a deep breath and you can move on from it. But you cannot move on from this if you're looking bigger picture. There's a difference between what the athlete tries to focus on, which is you can win only the games in front of you. Sounds cliche, but it's true. Versus what the fan looks at when you look at standings, playoffs, teams ahead, teams behind, who you root for, who you don't root for. You can really get caught up and understand how difficult this one was.
Well, and the Badgers, the problem is you have cupcake opponents on your schedule. And I don't know if you noticed this, but the Badgers came in at the beginning of the season ranked fourth in the country in the AP poll.
Right.
And I thought that was a little too high. Everyone's drinking the Badger Kool-Aid because they believe that this is a potential college football playoff team. Again, I was not ready to jump on that train because there were a lot of questions I had. And if you notice, yes, the Badgers beat their first two opponents. It took them a while to run away with it, but notice how they slipped. The next week, they fall to 5. The following week after New Mexico, they fall to 6. And now they're down to, what, 18?
Yeah.
Because of that loss? I mean, luckily, thank God they're still in the top 25. That's good. But that's the thing here. That's the difference. You know, Ohio State, then they have TCU, who's a pretty darn good team. You know, if the Badgers aren't going to get those quality teams to face here, those quality non-conference teams, then you have to steamroll. You have to win by 30, 40, 50, 60 points. You have to blow away these teams. You have to prove that these guys are cupcakes, we are really for real, and we're going to show it to you. And the thing is, this Badgers team, and with Paul Christ, they're not that kind of team that's notorious for steamrolling opponents.
Right.
Even going back to last year, you know, they're all about using time of possession, working their way down the field, taking advantage of every possession that they have, but they're not this team that just goes all out and just destroys football teams. They just don't have that in their DNA. So here we are. You made it a little interesting in the first two games, ran away within the second half, and now here you are in this game against BYU, and you laid an egg. It was just bad. So, this Iowa game, guys, I think, I'm stating the obvious here, but this is a critical game. If you want to get to the Big Ten championship, which is still very feasible, you want to win the Big Ten, it's all very feasible. But Iowa is a must-win game.
Okay, yeah.
It's a must-win game.
And I think convincingly so. Like, 14-13 isn't going to help you. Not much.
No.
They have a lot of ground to make up. And I'm reminded of Florida. Back in Tim Tebow's, second go-around, he was in two championship games. His time when he was the sole starter. and Florida lost to Ole Miss. And I want to say it was week four, week five of the season. Tebow comes out. He's crying. He's like, we're not going to lose again. At that time, there was enough in the tank for Florida and enough quality opponents left for Florida that they slowly crept back up, and they got to two so they could play Oklahoma in the national championship game. At this point, you have to ask yourself, is there enough in that tank for the Badgers, and are there enough quality opponents for them to move up and get into the top four? I'm not saying no. I'm saying I don't know.
But you said it yourself. When it comes to teams like Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, mm-hmm. if they lose a game, chances are they're still going to have a chance to compete for the college football playoff at the end of the year if they end up being a one-loss team.
SEC team, so that gets, you know, honestly, there's this thought about what that conference is and what the voters give to the SEC and so on and so forth, so that when Florida goes out and they play Auburn and they play Georgia and they play South Carolina and they play whoever else, and Florida State, I think, was good at that time, there were enough games out there that the voters considered quality games, quality wins, that it matters. Problem with the Badgers is on the other end of Iowa, what is there? Two more games that I can think of. Penn State, and they travel
to Michigan.
Michigan. I want to say Michigan State for some reason, but they go to Michigan.
Right.
Those are big. But then in between, like, what are you going to gain with Indiana? What are you going to gain with those type of teams?
I found one thing very interesting after the game, talking to some of the players, and you heard the cut there coming back from Kendrick Pryor. You know, that they're going to use this game as fuel, as motivation. And okay, I could definitely see that. You know, you could see these guys playing with a big chip on their shoulder Saturday night under the lights in Iowa. And I still think they're going to win. I think they're going to win that game. I think they're going to bounce back. They're going to shake it off and they're going to move on. But the one thing I found very interesting, you know, this team, these guys, last year, it was the same thing when you'd ask them about goals and aspirations and college football playoff. You know, Paul Chryst puts it in their minds that we're just doing things one game at a time. We're not putting this big goal, you know, up on the whiteboard to say, hey, this is what we need to accomplish. This is what Dakota Dixon, one of the veterans on that defense, had to say about the goals for this season.
All our goals are still there. Everything is still in front of us. You just got to keep playing one game at a time, one play at a time. We just got to attend to the details this week, and we'll get better tomorrow. We'll watch film, and we'll get better tomorrow, and we'll be right where we want to be.
So my question is, what are their goals?
Because he says they're all still there. They haven't changed.
What are those goals? I think one of the goals, whether Chryst says it or not to them, is winning a Big Ten championship, because they haven't done that three straight years.
Yeah, I think that's in there for sure.
That's got to be the goal, I think, at least the first goal. But then what are the other goals? I mean, is the goal every year in this football program to just get to the Big Ten championship, win the Big Ten championship, be the best in the Big Ten, get into a good bowl game, and it's a good season? I think for a lot of Badger fans, including me, I've accepted that look, that I don't expect this team to be a college football playoff caliber team every single year. You know, they're never going to get the best recruits. We've seen recruiting get better mm-hmm. under Paul Chryst.
Yep.
But I also think college football playoff, it takes a lot to get to that point. You know, I mean, we saw last year how tough it was to get to the college football playoff. I mean, that was probably one of the best teams we've ever seen in Wisconsin history.
Yep.
And they still came up short. So I don't know. I would love to know what those goals are. They're not going to tell you what those goals are, but I think at the end of the day, it's about winning the Big Ten, getting into a good bowl game, and winning that, and that's a successful season. That's what I think.
So the question you're asking is, what's on their chalkboard?
Right. What do they consider are the goals?
So if they say win the division,
mm-hmm.
sure, still in reach. Win the Big Ten championship, because you win the division, you would play in the Big Ten championship game, still in reach. But I think what, you know, I don't want to read in, so tell me if I'm wrong, but I think your question is, if there's that line at the bottom that says win the national championship, it might still be on the board, but you can't guarantee. They could do all the other ones on that board. They could win the division, win the Big Ten championship, blow everybody out. They might not still get that last one.
Right. Because as we've seen, winning the Big Ten championship doesn't guarantee you a spot in the college football playoff.
That's right.
As we've seen here the last couple of years. It doesn't guarantee anything. And it might be the case here. And it's going to be interesting. BYU is ranked now. Because of their win over Wisconsin, they got into the top 25. So now they are 25th overall in the country, according to the AP. So if BYU continues to beat their opponents, and they've got, did you say they have Washington on their schedule later?
At Washington and at Boise State.
Okay. So if BYU takes care of their opponents, that loss for the Badgers is not going to look as bad. Yeah. But the problem is, if you've got a one-loss Wisconsin team at the end of the year with a one-loss BYU team, and BYU is an independent team, BYU might get in over Wisconsin because they beat Wisconsin.
You're in a win-and-hope situation, which you didn't want to have to be in after 3 weeks.
Right, and that's why it kills everything with the college football playoff. It just does.
I don't want it to spoil this season for me because the Badgers were so special last year, and they brought a lot of that talent back, and I think they could be really special this year. But if you were talking about the highest form of special, I just don't know. That's a win-and-hope thing, and 3 weeks in, I didn't want to be in that position, win-and-hope.
Well, Iowa coming up. I think they're going to bounce back. I do. But Iowa, they're a pretty good football team.
Hey, you don't want to lose two in a row. That has a potential to get sideways.
Yeah.
You lose two in a row. And that's a tough one to go on the back end of BYU, too, to have to go to Iowa City and play the Hawkeyes. That's, man, oh, man. It's not easy. Badgers have the talent to pull it off without a question, but that's not easy for just about anybody. We've been talking some Badgers. We'll talk a little Packers as well. The Bill Michaels Show. Thanks for tuning in. Back after this.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
This portion of the program brought to you by our friends over at Neumel Medical, treating guys with ED, erectile dysfunction, all over the state of Wisconsin, beyond the borders. They have a location in Green Bay, one in Milwaukee, and a 98% success rate. All but guaranteeing success. Also, if you have the low T, looking for better mental clarity, better mood, better stamina, they can help you out there. Just go in and get checked if you're over the age of 30, or the all-in-one weight loss program. It really works. Just call them. 414-455-4451. That's the Neumel Medical Center. 414-455-4451. That's 414-455-4451.
The Bill Michaels Show. Kevin Holden from CBS 58 in for a couple of days here for Bill Michaels. Of course, Bill or me or anybody else sitting in this chair, we're still talking about that Packers 29-29 tie against the Minnesota Vikings. And a couple of key plays in that game. One of the biggest, an interception by HaHa Clinton Dix. I've been saying this for a while. You want that defense to be elite, the guy who has to go from good to great is that guy, HaHa Clinton Dix. You turn him into Charles Woodson, you're looking at a possible Super Bowl type of team. HaHa has been outspoken at the end of last year and the start of this year, and he had a lot to say after this tie game Sunday at Lambeau Field.
Finish ball games. We got to control the deep passes and find a way to close the game out, and we fell short.
Mike was saying you guys had a hard time adjusting when Kevin went down.
I wouldn't say we had a hard time adjusting when Kevin went down. It's the National Football League, and you got to play for four full quarters, and we didn't do that as a unit.
2 weeks in a row, you've had to kind of pick yourselves up after you thought you had a game finished. How tough has that been?
It's a part of football, man. This is a professional game. Those guys are good as well. And like I just said, man, we just got to play for a full four quarters and, find a way to get a win.
What is the biggest difference about playing on the road?
I'll say just being able to play back at home, it's a lot better. But being on the road, you got to worry about travel, family. Just a whole lot of things that go on with playing on the road. Or it could be opposite for other guys like me, where I can chill out and kind of get away from my family. I don't have to worry about them being in town. I hope they're not watching this. But, I love road games, to be honest with you.
He walks through the interception. What did you see? How did that, was that a right place, right time, or how did that unfold in front of you?
Just right place, right time. I knew we had to make a play, and I was able to do that, man. I knew that if they were empty, they were all running quick game, and just kind of stuck my foot in the ground and went towards the ball.
when you watch it again, did you see a window score? Like, what are you thinking there as you're returning it?
Just don't fumble the ball. I think we had a chance to win, and I wasn't thinking end zone, but after I watched the play, I was definitely thinking, damn, I should have scored, and we probably could have won the game, but that wasn't my mindset at the time. You know, it sounds good after the game is over, but in the heat of the battle, you're just thinking, man, you just made a big play, just don't turn it back over. So that was my mindset, you know, kind of like back when we played Seattle back my rookie year, and Morgan caught a pick, and all the guys were telling them to take a knee. But we see how that unfolded, so my mind changed. It's now different now. Anytime I get my hand on the ball, man, it's always been the goal, man. I want to score, so that's next for me.
That defense will try to do something big against Washington this Sunday, still undefeated on the season. Let's keep that going. Next hour, Jeremy Jeffress joins us on The Bill Michaels Show.
Wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.